सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः Verse 11. Samaste Shivastu Shvanasyutamekam.
Samaste Shivastu Shvanasyutamekam.
Samastani Vastuni Yamnas Prashanti.
Samastani Vastuni Yamnas Prashanti.
Vyadvat Sadashu Dhammachaswarupaha.
Vyadvat Sadashu Dhammachaswarupaha.
Sanityo Palabdi Swarupo Hamatma.
Sanityo Palabdi Swarupo Hamatma.
Samasteshu. Vastushu anusyutam ekam samastani vastuni yam na sprishanti vyadvat sada shuddham achaswarupaha sanityopalabdhi swarupohamatma. I am the timeless consciousness. Samastani Vastuni Yamnas Prashanti. I am that timeless consciousness whom no things at all. Samasta means all, everything. Vastu means all objects. Anything that can be objectified is a vastu. Okay? Even on the subtle level or physical level, anything that I can objectify, anything that exists within time and space, all of them, samasta. So samastani vastuni, all of these things, okay, nas prashanti, I am that timeless consciousness whom no vastus touch in any way, nas prashanti. They never touch me. Yet, samasteshu vastushu anusyutam ekam, I, the one conscious being, the one self, I pervade all of these vastus. Anusyutam means pervade. I pervade to the ends of all of these vastus, and yet none of these vastus, none of these things, touch me in any way. Vyadvat, like space, Sada, Shuddham, Achaswarupaha. Like space, my Swarupa, my nature is Sada, Shuddham. It is always pure. It is always Acha. Acha is another word for pure, so you translate them in two different ways. Shankara translates like this. My Swarupa, my nature is Shuddham. Means it's free of all raga dvesha, all likes and dislikes. All ajnanam. It's completely free of any mala, of any type of impurity, which is often called talked about as rag, as your very ajnanam, which is the cause of all the impurity. Your raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes, which are the cause really for all of the negative emotions. Even my sorrow, my unhappiness, my despair, is because I haven't gotten what I need to be whole, what I need to be complete. Because from the standpoint of knowledge, you already are that. From the standpoint of yourself, there is nothing to be gained. You can't make yourself more whole, more full than you already are. And so the raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes, I need this to be happy. I need this to be happy. I need to get rid of this to be happy. All of those feelings and pursuits are born out of self-ignorance. And the self-ignorance being that my being being projected onto the object that I'm pursuing. And then when I satisfy that desire, my mind becomes quiet. It as though reflects myself and I feel happy. And so it's a grand illusion. So that ashuddhi, that sense of that impurity, that feeling of being lacking, of being incomplete, of being unhappy, of being sad, of being angry, all of these type of emotions have their roots in self-ignorance. And that self-ignorance causes me to have my likes and dislikes, because these things are causing stress in my mind, which gives me the variety of unhappy experiences. And these things are giving me ashantavritti, which gives me a mind that, like the clear water reflecting the sun, my being is not obstructed in any way, and in fact reflects off of that vritti in such a way that I label it in terms of all the positive emotions like love and joy and happiness and fullness, care and compassion, all of those emotions that we feel so happy to be with. All of those are different forms of the shantavritti, which is really happens naturally those moments in my life when I don't want anything to be different. When I don't want anything to be different, I've either fulfilled desire, you know, then everything's perfect, or something beautiful, I'm taking a beautiful walk in nature, listening to some beautiful music, you know, or my little cat has snuggled up on my neck. So many things, you know, create that shantavritti, that vritti of that clear water. And whenever those vrittis are there, I feel happy. When they're not, I don't feel happy. And that's because I have no viveka, no discrimination between my own self, my own nature, and the thought, and the emotion. My ahankara is on the other side of the emotion. It's not on the side. It's not resolving into me, the one who illumines and is present to the emotion. It is because of ajnanam, totally identified with the thought, which is known, right? The thought, the emotion, it is known and it exists. And the is-knownness is me, the conscious being, abiding in that thought, right? And the existence is my own self. So in fact, these thoughts are mithya. They come into being feelings, they come into being, they go out of being. They come into me, they go out of me. I'm always the stable one. But so here, that shuddham that they're talking about is the nature of myself being free of this ajnanam, and therefore free of the ahankara, in fact, and therefore the I notion, and therefore free of all of these likes and dislikes. And the spectrum of emotions that arise when my likes and dislikes are not satisfactorily fulfilled, that causes me so much stress and unhappiness. Because from my standpoint, I am my mind, and my mind is not all, I am not always how I want to be. If I am my mind, I'm not always how I want to be. Sometimes I'm really sad, sometimes I'm hurting, etc. So when we say this shuddham, I am viedvat, like space, always pure like space. We use space a lot in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Upanishads as an example, because I can't wet space. In Bhagavad Gita they have a verse like this: I can't cut through space, I can't wet space, I can't burn space, I can't make it dirty with mud or dirt, you know. None of the other four elements really touch space in any way. Space remains shuddham, remains absolutely pure in the presence of all of these different types of activities and elements. And so no matter what is happening within space, space always remains exactly the same. So like that, no matter what is taking place in my mind, I remain exactly the same. The only problem is that that hasn't been differentiated. Once I've been differentiated from all of this activity and all of these emotions and moods and all of the things, good and bad, that go on in the world, then my mind has a sanctuary. I am its sanctuary. I am the one who is always there. I am that inner friend, never critical, always welcoming, not by any type of action, but just by my being, always unruffled, always strong. You can't push the self over. It's a really beautiful think sometimes when you're just contemplating and just with your own presence, just recognize the infinite strength of your being, because nothing can be done to it. So you're absolutely solid. There's nothing, there's not even words for that level of solidness, because really there's nothing else. And so nothing can touch me or harm me in any way. So that's the Shuddham. I'm pure, like space. And Acha Swarupam. Acha also means pure, but here Shankara takes this, because pure, as Amritam, the one who is free from any kind of death. I don't decay. I don't become old. I don't change in any way. I have no birth. I have no death. I am Nitya Upalabdhi. Nitya Upalabdhi means my being is the conscious being that I am is timeless. It doesn't go through any type of, it has no mortality to become sick and old and withered and dead. You know? All living beings in the creation become old and die. Even fruit, even our vegetables, our poor wilted vegetables that we didn't cook in time. No. They become wilted and die. All living beings, human beings also become wilt and die. Wilt often becomes sick, decay, die, go back to the elements. Atma doesn't become sick, it doesn't become old, it does not die. The self that I am is timeless. It's timeless in the sense of having no birth and death, but it's also between a potential birth and death, which it doesn't have, it has no aging, right? So we can think of things that they exist between birth and death, but in between they age, right? So what if something is birthless and deathless, but in between it's aging, you know? Swami will joke about that. It's like an old person becoming older and older and older and older, and pretty soon they're circling around inside. They hunch over, they start circling around their little poor little back, and like this, and circling around and around and around, because they're so very old, you know, because they've lived way, way too long. But the Atma, yourself, doesn't become old. It's never born, it never dies. The being that you are now is the being you've always been. And so this me, the me that I am, simply I need to differentiate myself from all the experiences I have. And then my mind needs to get to know me, because it has always taken itself to be me, so the me is always conditioned by one dress or another. Now I have to, the mind has to first recognize me in my own right as I am, and then as though come into relationship with me. Even though the mind is mithya, it has no real being other than me. From the standpoint of this mithya mind and the world, it gets itself into all kinds of trouble. Right? Even though it has no substance, no being apart from me, from its own standpoint, just like the dream world, it has no being or substance apart from me. But all kinds of things can go on in there. And for one who's trapped in that dream world, or one who's trapped in this world as though this is the reality, and I am just this little jiva, this little person that has to make my way, even though the whole universe is mithya, it has no separate being other than myself. It has no substance. There's no way that it can hurt me or harm me in any way. For the one who has self-ignorance, who's caught in that dream or caught in this creation as a separate entity from everybody else, and God is up in heaven, they're looking down, you know, very difficult situation to feel safe, to feel whole, to trust in your happiness, because happiness is dependent upon your desires. And so there's a continual trauma going on there. So this viveka, the only thing that's caught, the whole cause of the whole thing, is that lack of self-knowledge. I have self-knowledge. Self-knowledge, knowing myself, it's not just recognizing the one who is changeless. It's recognizing the relationship of the one who is changeless to all of the experiences that are coming and going. To recognize it, in fact, every experience I have, which I can extend to the whole universe, has no being other than myself. And so actually, it is all me. You know, in dream analysis, in Jungian dream analysis, I'm a therapist, so I do a lot of clients bring in their dreams. In dream analysis, one thing that we just kind of take for granted is that the whole dream is me. Not part of the dream is me. The whole dream is me. Every character in the dream and every relationship in the dream is just a manifestation of myself. And so we will go through each character and each object and each animal and see what it evokes to the conscious mind. Because the whole dream and every character in it is nothing but myself. So it's kind of a little bit mini type of knowledge, you know, but only in reference to the dream. We can actually do something very similar here in my experience of the world. You know, even my prarabdha karma, the karma that takes me from my birth to my death, that whole situation, not just this body, mind, sense organs, the whole situation, subject and object, me, the knower, the hearer, the seer, and the things that I'm knowing, seeing, heard, hearing, that whole thing is my prarabdha. And I'm just walking around in myself. But I'm walking, I say it like this, I am walking around in my prarabdha karma. This body, mind, sense organs is walking around in my prarabdha karma. Body, mind, sense organs is part of the prarabdha karma. The situation is part of the prarabdha karma. The whole prarabdha karma that includes me, the one who's walking around in it, and the situation I'm walking around in, the whole prarabdha karma is just one thread in the infinite body of Ishvara. Right, like one wave. Just think of being your one wave in the ocean. Right? And your little wave, the little wave in the ocean, is surrounded by a bunch of other waves. So your experience of you don't have the experience of the whole ocean as a little wave in the ocean, but you have an experience of a piece of the whole ocean. So right now you're having an experience of a piece of Ishvara, of the whole manifest creation. But this piece of Ishvara is Ishvara. It's not something else. It's Ishvara. And so your relationship to this is your relationship to the whole, really. It's a relationship to Ishvara. That's why the whole Karma Yoga Buddhi, that attitude, you know, let me receive. Let me do whatever actions are to be done within Dharma and let me receive the results of them, all is prasad from Ishvara, because it all is Ishvara. That's the attitude that we have until my knowledge starts taking root, where then I no longer even accept that kartritvam. I'm not even the doer of my actions. That also belongs to Ishvara. Think of the dream. The ahankara in the little dream character can be a little mumukshu character in the dream, gaining knowledge. So at first a little mumukshu, a little because the dream is little, but it's not little when it's happening. I'm just saying, as a, you know, affectionately calling it the little mumukshu, our little mumukshu, like our little child. So this little mumukshu, you know, is gaining knowledge and then initially has a relationship with Ishvara, with the whole dream, where it still wants this and that, you know, and wants to be good, wants to gain antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, and all of these things. And so as having that doership, that kartritvam, that doership, and enjoyership, thinking it belongs to it, then it tries only to follow Dharma. To follow Dharma is really a devotion to Ishvara, because Ishvara really is the manifestation of Dharma. You know, those are all of the laws that if you're within those laws, you're abiding, you know, as Ishvara. Actually, there's no jiva that's really present there, as your devotion is just to the Dharma. And so this little jiva is trying to really do that, to just follow the Dharma. And if there's any desires, any things he or she really wants, to do those, so you can be still a healthy person, not all balled up. You do all of those desires, but then you accept all of the results of the actions as prasad, as a gift, as a blessing from Ishvara. And in having that attitude, you gain a shantavritti, and that shantavritti gives you a depth of happiness, which allows you to slowly but surely, happily, give up all your raga dveshas, all your likes and dislikes, because just by that attitude of dharma, you have a depth of peace that makes your raga dveshas kind of fall off and become irrelevant. But that's kind of the process of our little mumukshu who is gaining knowledge, doing the shravana, manana, nididhyasana, which means they're listening to the shastra, being unfolded, thinking about it, contemplating on it, doing meditation, and all of the things in order to really see, really own up this knowledge that mumukshu is doing all of those things. And with that karma yoga buddhi, the mind starts to really settle down and to gain a natural vairagya, because you're also learning that your ananda, your fullness, really is not gained by fulfilling your desires. All that's happening when you're fulfilling your desires positively and negatively, I don't want this, let it go away, it goes away. That's the fulfilled desire. Okay. So all this fulfilling the desires is not doing anything except giving you a shantavritti, which is allowing momentarily for your mind to feel happy. Just momentarily until the next desire arises. You know? And so if our shantavrittis in the mind are dependent upon things that are continually changing and desires that are continually changing, the shantavrittis will continually go away. Because, well, first of all, the ananda that I'm seeking has nothing to do with any object in the world. It is really my own nature shining in that shantavritti that gives the experience of ananda. So for the one who has set self-knowledge, there's a twofold gain. The primary gain that we call moksha is the recognition that the ananda, that my being, which is by nature, it's very swarupa, is by nature completely whole. It is the very ananda that we're always seeking in the world. That fullness or wholeness is who I am. And in fact, I don't need any vritti at all. It doesn't matter to me if I have a shanta vritti or I have a agitated vritti or wherever it is. Vrittis, they're just thoughts. It doesn't make any difference. I can welcome them. And if something in me is upset, I can welcome it, you know, and make it feel better. Because nothing's happening to me. Nothing's happening to my ananda. That is moksha, that recognition. Then, in terms of my own, from the standpoint of the jiva, in terms of my own being, then the real moksha is I don't need any vritti, I don't even need the universe. It doesn't matter. Nothing will take away and can take away my wholeness, and that's the truth of my being and who I am. That's my self-experience. But there's a secondary gain, is that as my mind discovers the source, that I, my being, is the source of the ananda, it had been circuitously thinking, seeking in the world, going circling around here, and fulfilling this desire, gaining the shantavritti temporarily so that I can be happy. It doesn't want to do that anymore. It just wants to go to the ananda itself. And so then, the secondary gain is that my mind very rarely has any type of problem, because it's not asking something that is finite and changing to stick with me in a particular way, you know. I'm not trying to make anything in the world make me happy. That's a losing battle. It just doesn't work. It will work for moments, for short periods of time, but never as something I can just relax and trust, because in fact, it's silly for us to ask for that. You're asking things that, by their nature, change and come and go and are separate from you. You know, they're all changing. And then you also are continually changing. Even your desires come and go and change. And you're asking for somehow this world to give you, you know, a stable well-being so you can say, all is well with me. And then just go about your way. But the world can't give you that. You can't even give yourself that. Your body, mind, sense organs can't give you that, because they're continually changing. So that's why we're continually failing. But what about when I don't? What about when I found the source? And I am the source. And the source that I am is free of time. And my mind is not able, because it's mitya, to ever be away from me, even if it wanted to. Oh, let me get away from her. It can't. Because I am its very self. And the self that I am is changeless. And the self that I am is the very ananda that the mind has always sought. And so, really, problem solved. It's problem solved. Now, as you gain this clarity, gain this knowledge, then when it becomes clear, not just intellectually, it's intellectually also, because there's so much logic that supports this. But this knowledge is talking about yourself that's here right now. So you have to see the truth of it in real time here as me. And as this body, this mind, this sense organs that we're talking about, and this world that we're experiencing. This is here right now. So we're not, this is not indirect knowledge that then we have to go meditate on and try to realize. It is not indirect knowledge, because we're talking about myself that is here. And the mind that is here, the body that is here, the experiences that are here. And so these words of the Upanishads, or these words as they're being unfolded, hopefully land. They're like pointers. They're pointing to something that is here to be seen. So as your mind is listening, the listening should be more in the form of seeing what is being said, because it's pointing at something that is here. See what I mean? That's an important part of when we say that the Vedanta is a pramana, it's a means of knowledge. You know, this is what we mean, is that it's giving immediate, direct knowledge. So we have to, that shapes our understanding of how to listen. You know? You probably feel it naturally happening, because it's all of the words are pointing at you. You know? But we also teach how to listen, what it means for it to be a pramana. You know, it's a very important part of understanding what the Upanishad is. And so here, we look at this verse again. Samasteshu vastushu anusyutamekam. I am that timeless consciousness, which is ekam, which is one, and one being, right? And this one being, which is me, right? It anusyutam. It pervades everything. There, like the pot, like the clay pervades the pot, there is nothing in my experience that is away from me. Just think of this vritti thought modification that you're having right now. Is there any chunk of it that's not pervaded by you? Right? And all experience that you have, and all experience that all beings have, and all experience that Ishvara has, because it has for its being, its sat, its existence and its being, the self, there is nothing in that experience that is away from that. You know? Even to understand also, I said this the other day, if using your imagination, I ask you just to imagine your version of a universe. Just your imagination. You've been taught in school, and so you have some material inside resting there in your unconscious to pull out and just imagine the universe, your version of the universe. That's a pretty big imagination. But however big the imagination, or however big the real universe, it can never go beyond the nature of your being, because the nature of you, your being, is free of time and space. That's what makes it non-dual. It has no borders. If there's no space, there's no time, there are no borders. Say no space, then where does your self end and where does it begin? No space, but you are. What size are you? How big are you? These words are all totally irrelevant. All these words about size and distance and, you know, big or small or short or tall or red or yellow, all of these things, you need space. You need to be in space. But when the whole space comes from you and you are its adhishtana, you are the truth of what is there, for you there is no space. So there is no size. So the whole, even the whole concept of pervasion is only from the standpoint of the thing that has been projected or the universe that is being experienced. From its standpoint, we say the self pervades it because that experience can't be away from the self. And so just naturally it pervades it because there's nothing away from the self. But the self, just like when you imagine a big universe, you don't all of a sudden pervade, like you stretch out to become that universe. You don't stretch out to become anything because there is nothing but you. From your standpoint, you have no size. That's why sometimes I mention, they call, say it, I'm kind of like an infinite point. Why that's important is, say, when we're contemplating, you know, we're sitting, you know, with myself, and then there's the shantavritti of my mind. And my mind does take up space. One vritti is different than the other. It exists within duality. But it's very quiet. But it has a sense of, like, relaxation, spreading. I'll even say, let your mind, like, relax out into space. You feel it extending in its relaxation. Say, let the body, I'll do the same with the body, let the body become so relaxed that you can't even feel the borders of the body because of the relaxation. And so you feel an extension of relaxation of your body and mind. And so that's spatial. You are not spatial. And so now, in that silent being, of the silence of the vritti, of the body-mind experience, yourself is not extending. You simply are. You are not big. You are not small. So why I'm telling you this is because when we do this meditation, then we don't want to look at the mind to discover the self. See what I mean? The self is, the mind is quiet like the self. The mind is so relaxed that it's just spreading out into space, as though pervading, you know, spreading out in space. Yourself is not pervading in that sense. It's not spreading out from its own standpoint. And so it's just you, just your simple being that you can say is like an infinite point, or you can say it's, you're free of time and space. Time and space is irrelevant to you. So let that relaxed, spread out mind that doesn't really have any type of objectification or agitation in it, because now it's quiet and relaxed, if it is, you know. Let that mind turn a gentle focus just to me that's illumining it, the me that is itself. So you're turning away from the quiet, beautiful vritti, right? That vritti is now just gently turning its focus to be focused on you. And then what happens is that yourself, the self that you are, which is actually illumining the vritti, and the vritti, without modification, is focused on you, the one who's illumining it, right? The very vritti, as though, erases itself. It's no longer, and the vritti is, it doesn't go away, but it's no longer an issue because its whole content is just focused on your being. And so now I am illumining a vritti that is focused only on me. And that's what we call when we are able to do that without any type of an agitation or extroversion. We call that state savikalpa samadhi. What that means, samadhi means the mind is very absorbed, you know, and it's gently focused on my own being. And when that happens, the example they use is, imagine holding a flame, candle flame, up to the sun, right? Maybe initially you can still cognize the outline of the flame. That's savikalpa samadhi. And your mind is just totally just with your own being. Its focus is on just your presence, your being. But your mind is still present so that there's knowledge that you're focusing on your being, and your being is illuminous, that duality is still there, even though the focus is only on you. That duality is still there. It's like the candle flame is still there, but the content of the flame and the content of the sun are the same. When that savikalpa, that with savikalpa means with vikalpa, subject object, is still there, that savikalpa can turn into nirvikalpa, where there's no vikalpa, no subject object at all, because your mind is so kind of resolved into your own being, and your own being is what it is. And so for some time you can just abide just as yourself without any subject object differentiation. That's what they call samadhi. That's what people, some people work for in meditation, to have that depth of resolution. But, you know, actually you don't have to have that, because the mind is mithya and it has no being other than yourself. Whether it has a thought or there's some thought flow going through, your task is to recognize you, the subject, that isn't thinking or feeling or imagining, but is always the same. The vrittis and experiences don't stop you from recognizing that. It's nice and can be useful to totally get rid of the whole thing in contemplation, so you can know for sure, ah, I am so free of everything. But on the other hand, since everything that you experience is coming and going, and you are remaining the same, that tremendous freedom is there anyway to be recognized. And actually it's recognized all of the time, no matter what you're doing, because the ajnanam, self-ignorance, has been removed. Doesn't come back again. Like, imagine the little boy seeing the rope and then trying to get that snake back. You really can't. You can teach all about it. You can tell what's happened very vividly and everything, but to actually get that snake back, that's not going to happen. You know, it's still going to be an imagined snake, not a real snake. And so as you know yourself, that's what happens. You can't get the ignorance back. And so it's just a question of, over time, your mind settling down. That's where all this karma yoga and everything comes in, because the mind has kind of has habitual, it behaves as though has habitual ignorance. it behaves as though it's ignorant. Even though you know it's behaving as though it's ignorant, you know. Then you should just kindly bring the mind back. Be patient. It's asking too much of the mind. It's like that. It's a little baby trying to learn how to walk. You're encouraging and so pleased as it learns more and more. And you can be that way toward your own mind as it settles into your knowledge. You can be really pleased as you watch over time things falling off, and you know, yourself becoming, your own presence becoming more dominant in all of your experiences, because the mind is spending more and more time, you know, with you, in a sense. Even if it's not spending time with you, it's still with you. But it can get itself into a lot of trouble. I want this and I want that. And it creates a whole web, which you nicely illumine. And since you're not away from that web that it's creating, all those problems it's creating, when it starts creating pain for you, then you can say, okay, time to come home. It's like calling your kids in from play. Time to come home. Come home now. And settle down. It's okay. So come home. You bring them home to your knowledge. So that's good. And that's it.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.